There are many kinds of museums. From the supersized Smithsonian to the childhood home of Muhammad Ali, from Bangkok to Boston, and everywhere in between. But museum goers only see part of the full picture. On this show, we open the crates, tell the stories, meet the people, and reveal the inner workings, unseen, unheard, until now. From Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential. The name Edward Hopper is almost synonymous with melancholy. His depictions of loneliness and isolation remain as popular as ever, perhaps gaining new relevance in our digital society where face-to-face human interaction is becoming more and more endangered. Hotels and motels play a central role in Hopper's art, the perfect setting to present his favorite themes. A new show on this topic recently opened at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts in Richmond. Edward Hopper and the American Hotel is the first in-depth look at this side of Hopper's work. The show features 65 pieces by Hopper and 35 by other artists exploring similar themes. To take the hotel concept to the next level, the museum recreated a room based on Hopper's Western Motel. The adjacent space serves as a fully functional hotel room. Every night was sold out before this show even opened. We recently checked in with the show's curator, Dr. Leo Mazzo. So I was intrigued by hearing about this show, not just because of the kind of enduring interest in all things Edward Hopper, but the general conceit of it, the idea of the kind of celebration of the American hotel and this kind of culture. Tell me about the origins of the idea for the show.
I wanted to do an exhibition that dealt with both the promise and peril of American mobility, simply the dynamics involved in getting from point A to point B. And I was originally working on a book manuscript on this very topic, and it dawned on me that this is precisely the type of narrative that might read particularly clearly and be kind of interesting to play out on museum walls. And, you know, there are plenty of American artists who have their share of images of, I don't know, planes, trains, and automobiles. And Hopper has a good bit of trains and automobiles anyway. But what Hopper also has that very few other artists have is an interest in the infrastructure of the things that facilitate those planes, trains, and automobiles. Things like roads and turnpikes and bridges and diners and hotels and motels. Those in-between moments. You know, there's so much. If 5% of our world is vanilla ice cream, another 5% is tumult and tragedy. Hopper looks at the in between, that 90% of other things, and the lesson monumental, the lesson heroic. But he finds beauty in the banal, and he finds value in the most vernacular things, and that really comes alive in these in between places we call hotels and motels.
There's a loneliness, of course, that's always been associated with Hopper's work and hotels. I think, you know, when you know, I'm thinking about when you watch a film like Lost in Translation or something like that, they bring a certain hint of loneliness to them. And the other thing is they're very modern in a way. You look at these images. It's hard for me not to look at these figures in these Hopper pieces and not imagine them sitting alone in their room with a smartphone in their hand. You could very easily imagine people inserting modern technology into these scenes and still portraying the loneliness that we still feel now as we're disconnected, even though we're connected through all these devices. Talk about the kind of contemporary appeal of Hopper's work now.
I don't have to talk about it too much because a lot of people have beat me to the punch there. In 2009, the Main Art Museum in Vienna did a show simply called Western Motel, in which they found not just a slew of artists, you know, major contemporary artists that you would have heard of, not just who are influenced by Hopper, but who are have responded specifically to that painting at the Yale University Art Gallery called Western Motel. When you do a search in the MLA, the Modern Language Association database, if you type in the phrase Edward Hopper, you will find not just people writing about Hopper, but you will find several novels and poems and volumes and anthologies of people, poets and novelists, responding to Hopper's work. But I think the reason, the why behind all of this, I think it's a lot of what you suggest. I think that loneliness and alienation and isolation, these are not things we just feel today. They're, you know, they're part of human conditions. And Hopper gives us a very particular kind of alienation. He gives us often raking light. He exposes it. And, you know, the theme of waiting, perpetually waiting, and those in-between moments are what a lot of other artists don't give us in the numbers that Hopper does give to us. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There is something modern and contemporary, contemporaneous about this, as you would say. You know, one of the reasons we have works by other artists in this exhibition is because we find similar themes in earlier American art, people like Richard Caton Woodville, whose War News from Mexico is in this exhibition, or a hotel room by, say, John Singer Sargent, which is in this exhibition. But we have plenty of artists who, several of whom you see the Hopper hotel and motel impulse in, people like Cindy Sherman, for example, and several other photographers like Gregory Crudson and pop artists like George Siegel, who respond directly to Edward Hopper. I mean, you can see their works in this exhibition, Edward Hopper in the American Hotel.
Talk about Hopper's success in his own life. Was he a popular artist from the get-go? Talk about his career in the time where he was making these works.
Hopper, in fact, was not a terribly successful artist, or certainly painter, from the get-go by any means. He studied under Robert Henri at the New York School of Art, and one of Hopper's classmates, George Bellows, had much more immediate success than Hopper did. And so Hopper is really not wildly successful until the mid-30s and early 40s. He sold a painting in the Armory Show in 1913, which was the introduction of modern art on American shores, but he does not regularly start selling art, his paintings anyway, until much later, decades later. There are a number of commercial publications, both popular periodicals and trade magazines, that Hopper provided illustrations for from the early 20th century until about 1925. And he made ends meet by doing this. I mean, certainly he's making other art at this time. Some scholars have suggested that Hopper simply could not stand making illustrations. His own wife compared doing commercial work to doing the dishes, a brain-sapping, pot-boiling activity. But the fact is Hopper was very, very good at it. And the proof that it was more than just some make work is suggested in the fact that so many works that he created have a real debt. Works that he made in the 30s, 40s, and 50s harken back to his commercial illustration work. And I'll tell you, in 1924 and 1925, among the last commercial assignments he got were from a hotel trade magazine called Hotel Management. He created 18 brilliantly illuminated covers for them. And several of the covers, and we have several of these on display in the Richmond exhibition, several of these covers play out not only in works of art in his hotel and motel subject matter, but in other works as well. You know, Hopper was, I don't know how politically conservative he may or may not have been, but he is very interested in his mature painting career in looking at earlier American styles, and indeed, among the early American isms that play out in his later work are the covers he did for hotel management. In fact, a major painting that he produced called Hotel Room, which is now in the collection of the Museo Nacional Thyssen-Bornemisza in Madrid, and which we have on display in our exhibition, that work responds and rehashes in rather direct, literal fashion, the cover of Hotel Management from May of 1925.
Was that piece at one point owned by Steve Martin?
No. There's another painting by Steve Martin owned at one point, a painting called Hotel Window. And we don't have that. That work is now in the hands of a private collector. And we have three studies for that painting, one of which is on loan from the Yale University Art Gallery, and two of those studies are on loan from the musician Bruce Hornsby and his wife, Kathy. So the Hornsbys are one among several collectors who have very kindly parted with their prized possessions for the duration of this exhibition.
Now, the bulk of the Hopper estate ended up in the hands of the Whitney Museum. Is that correct in terms of who holds most of this material?
The Whitney, yes, has more work than any other museum. There are a few that the Provincetown Art Association and Museum was recently gifted about 150 drawings by Edward Hopper and his wife, Josephine, who is also an artist in her own right, and who in fact sacrificed the bulk of her artistic career for her husband. And they have lent us several drawings. They were also gifted by the same people who gifted them the drawings. They were also given the full run of Josephine Hopper's diaries, which have proved an invaluable primary source as we have created this exhibition and crafted the accompanying publication. So the Whitney does have, Jo Hopper did will the works in her possession to the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York, and the Whitney has exhibited these things very, very much. They've been extremely generous in their loan of works to the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts and the next venue for our Hopper and Hotels exhibition, which is going to be starting in early June of 2020 at the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfields.
Yeah. When Hopper was working, and you mentioned his time doing commercial art and illustration, you know, a lot of people think about him in the same way maybe people think of Norman Rockwell or N.C. Wyeth,
sure,
or some of these other people. And oftentimes the critical communities look down on those artists, but at the same time there's this great mass appeal. What was the critical response to his art around the time these works were being shown for the first time? Was he seen as a more of a commercial artist or an illustrator and was not, you know, given the credit he deserved? When did that start to come into play?
Again, he hits it pretty big starting in the mid-30s. He has a retrospective exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art in New York in 1933. The previous year, he was recognized by the National Academy of Design in New York. He also in 1933, he was included in the first biennial sponsored by the Whitney Museum. In the early 30s, he received awards in various exhibitions in Baltimore and elsewhere. So, you know, when they were trying to establish Edward Hopper as a serious American artist, Hopper, his wife, and some of his artist friends who were also writers did not speak glowingly about his years as an illustrator, because I think that Hopper himself had something of a love-hate relationship with his role as an illustrator. But the fact is, he won at least one very major award for it, and he was recognized, you know, as a very good commercial illustrator. But, you know, is that the kind of faint and damning praise you want if you're a painter? So just as a number of actors end up waiting tables or end up doing commercial shorts or end up having bit roles, perhaps a cast of dozens on the background of a soap opera, so Hopper had a very mixed relationship. I don't think he loved doing commercial work, but I personally, having read a lot of the diaries and many primary and secondary sources, nor do I think he disdained it as much as some modern interpreters have suggested. And I also think that when you're looking at Wyeth's book illustrations or Norman Rockwell's Saturday Evening Post covers, we have to remember that commercial illustration is not one monolithic, static category. To the contrary, there are several extremes here. You could be simply making random line drawings uncredited in a fly-by-night publication, or you could have full-color illustrations on the cover of prize-winning publications like Hotel Management. Hopper had both extremes of employment, and some historians have compared having a full-color illustration on the cover of a major national magazine to modern-day television publicity. So we have to be careful. Hopper, you know, may not have liked being at the beck and call of commercial illustrators, commercial assignments, but on the other hand, I think that it would be hard to look down upon the type of assignments he was in fact given. And so I think it's a little more complicated than just liking or disliking.
Today's episode of Museum Confidential is sponsored by Special Event Rentals. Most museums are pretty big places with lots of open space. That's kind of the point. But we also have bills to pay. That's where you come in. Corporate function, wedding, high school reunion, chances are your local museum has just the right spot for such an occasion. And if you have to attend said happening and don't really want to, well, at least you'll be at a museum so you can wander off and look at stuff. They won't think you're being antisocial. Quite the contrary. You'll be seen as someone who could be wasting the night away drinking and dancing, but would rather soak up some high culture. It's win-win. Book a museum for your next big thing. You're welcome.
One of the things that this show has been getting a lot of press about is kind of a novel aspect, which is there is a space in the exhibition that is a recreation of one of the hotel rooms depicted in the paintings. And you guys have basically turned it into a rentable Airbnb space that people and guests can spend the night in, which I know have all sold out and went very quickly. But where did the idea come from to say, hey, let's let people spend the night in the museum? And was that a hard thing to get through the red tape of the way museums traditionally work?
I'm not sure that I should admit this, but in fact, it was my idea. But I have to be careful with that because the whole cliche of it taking a village is certainly applicable here. I may be the one who came up with that idea, but I relied very heavily on our very wonderful professional design department here, led by a man named Daniel Young. There's a carpenter here named Bob Dexter who single-handedly made several of those things. We also relied on other people on our larger museum team to find some of these things, like the suitcases online. There's a young woman in the area who we commissioned to paint the background of the Green Buick and the Mesas, for example. I would make a very small correction or clarification of what you just said. It's not in the exhibition. It's visible from the exhibition, but it's on a different HVAC and security system than the rest of the exhibition. I hope it's a novel thing. It did sell out rather quickly, and we were glad to see that. the hotel, you know, it's not an exact replication of the painting at Yale Western Motel, but obviously we wanted to use that and other paintings as prompts for a certain experiential approach towards Hopper's interiors and his hospitality series in general. And I'm thinking of hotels, motels, apartment hotels, which are apartments with the amenities of hotels, tourist homes, which are like Airbnbs. And we have Hopper's examples of each of these throughout the exhibition, certainly. But using those compositions as so many psychological prompts, we wanted to give visitors the opportunity to push that approach to hospitality services just a little further. So yes, there is a hotel room just adjacent to the exhibition, invisible just to the left of the painting on loan from Yale called Western Motel. There is a window offering a full view of a partial fabrication of that painting in three-dimensional form. And again, it is on a separate alarm, separate climate control system, and you can lower the blinds in this room so that no one's going to see you, no one is surveilling you or anything like that. To the contrary, this is a regular hotel room. It just happens to be in the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts.
Are you going to spend a night there? Are you going to spend a night there?
By the time I decided I wanted to do this, I've been thinking about it. You know, I've been so in the weeds with this exhibition for a while. Shame on me, I did not think about that till the last minute. I was speaking with my girlfriend about this. And so there are three levels of rooms that were available. And there's 150, there's 225 or thereabouts. There's also a $500 level, which
different amenities and options go along with each of these.
I'll say, yeah. And only the $500 rooms were available by that time. And I was honestly thinking about it, but I didn't think quickly enough because it sold out. It took a little while longer, maybe a week longer, for the $500 rooms to sell out. And a few of my colleagues were test guests in the hotel room, and I thought about doing that, but again, people volunteered before I did. But I was busy with other aspects of the exhibition.
You were living there in a different kind of way, I'm sure.
I guess, yeah.
Someone of Hopper's stature at this point in 2019 has had, I don't even know how many exhibitions around the world at this point. I would have to assume hundreds,
sure.
Probably. And you probably wouldn't want to take on something like this that you're going to spend years looking at, thinking about, putting together. If you weren't going to offer something, at least attempting to be new, what does this exhibition offer that you think is kind of a new take or a different look on what's been said or heard before about Hopper?
Well, I don't know of any exhibitions to make complete use of the Josephine Hopper diaries, which were only recently gifted to the Provincetown Art Association and Museum. They are now in the public domain. They were on display at the Provincetown Museum a few years ago. But our use of them, we've had interns transcribing the Joe Hopper diaries for some time now, and they are the key primary source upon which the catalog for this exhibition is based. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. I also think that while the hotel management and one other trade publication that Hopper worked for in the hotel industry have on occasion been included in exhibitions, including exhibitions about his work as an illustrator, it has been a very, very long time. I'm certainly not the first person to think of them as not just commercial art, but actual fair game for art history, but they've never received this type of full treatment in which they've been compared to Hopper's work and works by other artists. And just to be a master of the obvious, this is the first exhibition and publication to focus on the entire realm of hospitality services, which means not only hotels, motels, apartment hotels, motor courts, and tourist homes, but the service industry, the amenities that cater to them, such as entertainment, food, and automobiles. And so this is the first such exhibition to highlight these interesting cultural constructs.
And as the buses go groaning and wheezing, down on the corner I'm freezing. On a restless boulevard at a midnight road, I'm across town from Easy Street, where the tight knots of moviegoers and out-of-towners on the stroll. The buildings towering high above lit like dominoes or black dice. Used car salesmen dressed up in Purina checkerboard slacks. Foster Grand wraparound.
Few American works of art are as recognizable or parodied as often as Edward Hopper's Nighthawks. The painting was completed in early 1942. On St. Patrick's Day of that year, Hopper and his wife, Jo, attended the opening of a Rousseau exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan. The show had been organized by Daniel Catton Rich, director of the Art Institute of Chicago. At that very moment, Nighthawks was on display in New York at Hopper's regular gallery in the Air France building at 683 Fifth Avenue. At the Rousseau opening, Jo Hopper suggested to Rich that he go to the gallery and see the painting. He did. And the Art Institute bought Nighthawks for $3,000. It's remained in Chicago ever since. According to an invoice dated May 13, 1942, after fees and commission, Hopper took home a whopping $1,971 for his most famous painting. In November of 2018, Hopper's painting Chop Suey sold at Christie's for a record $91.9 million. We could speculate on how much Nighthawks is worth now, but, you know, it's rude to discuss money. That's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory at the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about what's going on at the museum and at the station, visit philbrook.org or publicradiotulsa.org or both. We suggest both. Until next time, look closer.